Welcome back to another episode of the Inside Japan podcast, which is sponsored by Jobs in Japan, the best place on the internet to find your next job in Japan. Today, I'm talking with Tyson Bettino, who is the owner and manager of OneCoin English, BFF Tokyo, and Japan Switch. Hey, Tyson, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great and very glad to be on the show again.
Yeah, it's fantastic to have you on here. And you're a really, really interesting guest because you've started not only an English school in Japan, which I know a lot of people want to do, but also a Japanese school as well. So can you tell us a little bit about how you started those and what were some of the kind of difficulties of starting, especially a Japanese school? I would have thought that would be a very difficult thing to do in Japan with so much competition from native Japanese.
Definitely. So I was an English teacher for about 5 years. Then I became a manager at Interact trainer for about 3.5 years. And I was in charge of the biggest client in Interact, which is Yokohama City. Then from there, I left Interact without any job. And somehow someone I managed at Interact, who really liked me, introduced me to my co-founder and co-owners of OneCoin English. And OneCoin English is a low-cost English school chain in Yokohama and Tokyo. And we have about 11 locations now.
Wow, and that's really impressive. How long ago did you start that? What was about the time that you started?
2014.
Okay, so that'd be about 2 years after I came to Japan.
Yeah,
so I've been here a while as well, but I tried to start an English school a little while ago as well, and I found it really hard to get off the ground. Like, even just starting and finding those first few customers was really, really difficult. So how did you start? Like, what was the thing that actually got you rolling and starting having some customers and people coming in the door?
So we were pretty lucky in that so we started in 2014, but one of the original owners and co-founders, he actually owned the biggest Korean language school chain at the time. And they have schools probably like 8 all over the nation, more than 10,000 students. At the time, they only had about 3,000 students. But so we actually started the English school in his Korean language school. And we got his Korean language students to take lessons at the English school. With around 3,000, 4,000 students, you'd think it would be a really high number. But I think we only had around probably 30 to 40 students.
But that's still quite impressive for a school to start off with, because I know a lot of people who maybe they will work at a kindergarten or an elementary school or a junior high school, and then they start their own school. And what they do is they'll get a few of the parents to kind of bring their kids along for like private classes, and then those parents tell other parents, and over the course of like a year or two, they'll get, you know, 10 to 20 students, which is enough for them to go, okay, well, maybe I can do this as a school instead of my main job. But yeah, that's like after a year or so, but it's starting off with maybe 30 or 40 students is, you know, it's already quite a lot of people to start working with.
Yeah, I would say probably the biggest hurdle to starting an English school in Japan as a foreigner is marketing.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And, we were lucky in that the CEO is actually, I would say he's a high intermediate level marketer.
Okay. That's really useful, because that's actually my background as well. Like with Jobs in Japan, I'm doing the marketing, and I think there are a lot of opportunities in Japan because of how Japanese companies do marketing, but there's also kind of like an expectation. I think familiarity is a really important part of it. And so Japanese people are kind of expecting you to have, you know, ads on the train or something like that to have some kind of trust level so they can go, okay, so it's a big enough company that they can afford to spend money on, you know, these ads, that way I can feel comfortable sending my kids there. Whereas, you know, if you're doing something like, you know, a new school, you know, a lot of people end up just standing outside train stations giving out flyers, you know?
That technique surprisingly works. I've talked to many friends and they said that has been their bread and butter. Just being out there on the streets with your suit, if it's cold, you got a jacket, and you're just handing out those flyers to anyone who's willing to take them.
Yeah. I've heard the same thing. So which one was harder to start, the English school or the Japanese school? Because you started Japan's Switch. I remember when you started it a few years ago. That was when I think the first time I met you was around the time you'd started Japan's Switch. So which one was more difficult to actually get rolling? Because it seems like the English school you kind of had a little bit of a bump to start off with. How was that with the Japanese school as well, since you were already established?
Yeah, I think I'll say they're challenging for different reasons. To be honest, the English school, it might for me personally, I don't think this applies to most foreigners. I think the English school was easier to start. The main reason being one of the partners, he knows how to do marketing very well, high level and PR. Another partner is his experience is I guess kind of like franchise and chain development. So like developing the interior, making the school look pretty, and let's say the sales process like that. And from my end, I managed probably 150 full-time teachers at Interact. So I understand, let's say teaching, I understand recruiting, and I understand management and training. So I think each of us, I think the main reason we're able to grow so quickly, and I think if it wasn't for COVID, we actually would be probably set up more in or more nationally. I think we would probably have schools in maybe Nagoya or Osaka by now. But since we each had a different strength, we're able to move forward in a straight line very quickly. So
Yeah,
like
and
I think the
it's
partnership
good.
was perfect.
Right, it's really good to have those kind of people in your team. Like a lot of people kind of want to start a business with someone who does the same thing as them or that they know really well. And it's like, no, you really need to find people who have skill sets that will be really useful for your business. So, in starting an English school, what was what? Because I know a lot of people in our audience that might be a dream for a lot of people who have been teaching in junior high school or teaching high school or kindergarten, thinking I can start my own school, I can do this myself, because they want to have more freedom, they feel like they could do a much better job, especially than some of the public schools in Japan that have pretty low levels of attainment in English. So, what would be some of the really important things to get in a row, other than having some other people on your team who can do skills that you don't have?
Yes, that's a very good question. So I think the challenge that most teachers have is that they're very good at teaching. They know what they want to teach. But for example, they don't know how to do marketing. They don't understand maybe accounting and finance.
How important
And
is accounting and finance in the early days of a school? Because I know like a lot of people will be running close to the line, close to the red line. So yeah, how is that an important skill? Like, and
I think it's super important if you don't want the school to manage you, if that makes sense. For example, if you want to run your own school, you want to develop some work-life balance, you definitely need to learn some finance and accounting. If not, a common trend that tends to happen is someone who is a great teacher, they develop a school. And 3 to 4 years later, they're making more money than they were teaching, but they're also working like 1.5, 2 times as hard or twice as hard. And it's really stressful. And I think, so I guess to answer your question, I think for me, I think if you, for the listeners out there who want to open up their own school, the first part is you have to understand what your goal is in 3 to 5 years. So what I mean by that is, do you want to manage 5 schools? Do you want to manage 3 schools? Or are you perfectly happy with running 1 school where you're the only teacher? And I think based on that, how you approach making your school completely changes. Because if you want to own 3 schools, you have to think about locations. Then you have to think about management because you can't do everything yourself. And if you only want to have 1 school where you have your own, you teach what you want, kind of work when you want, maybe opening your own school might not actually be the best idea, and rather just teaching privates to a large amount of students. Or maybe you could like rent space, or in my case, when I was teaching, I rented a community center space.
Interesting, because yeah, I think that's one of the things that people don't recognize is yeah, you want to teach what you want to teach, but if you end up doing all of the stuff that you wanted to teach, and then on top of that, you also have to do all the finance. You have to manage all of the students and talk to the parents, or talk to the if it's adult students, you have to talk to them and you have to communicate with them. You have to organize everything. Then you end up working like twice as hard as you were when you're an ALT for not twice as much money. That makes a lot of sense. So I kind of want to move on to the Japanese part because it's really interesting. You must be like the first Western foreigner to start a Japanese school in Japan when there's all these other Japanese schools available. So, what are some ways of learning Japanese that you think is worth starting a Japanese school for? Because I've been to multiple Japanese schools and I found there's a big focus on things like grammar translation method, a lot of reading and writing, when really what I want to be doing is speaking a lot so that I can communicate while I'm here. So, what are some of the reasons why you started a Japanese school and how do you do things differently?
Gotcha. So I'll say that for me, the Japanese school was back to the original, it was actually harder to start. The main reason was I have N1 myself, so I understand how to study. But one is I didn't understand the customer, even though they were other Westerners. Because in my case, I was able to get pretty much up to N, or I got N2 purely through self-studying. So I didn't understand the person who would normally use a school. Also, I knew nothing about marketing, so I had to learn marketing from scratch. I did have to spend a lot of time like trying to understand our foreign customers. And I'll say the third part is I'll say dealing with foreign customers is actually much harder than dealing with Japanese customers in terms of let's say I'll say Japanese customers don't read the contract, but they read it more often than foreigners do. And in our case, like we even I guess one of my two boasting points is one is I think I'm actually am the first Westerner to open up a Japanese language school. And the second one is I think we have the smallest contract, which is 2 pages in big font. But even despite that, even despite underlining things, like there's only four things you need to know. They're all underlined. Let's say it's sometimes a challenge dealing with foreigner customers. But I would say there's also a lot of benefits with working with foreign customers in the sense that I can make the contract in English really quickly. I can make kind of like our sales pamphlets, our marketing web page, everything is in English. So I can do the marketing end probably 5 times faster than if I were to do marketing to Japanese at a high level.
So
But
how about the learning style? Because I think that's a really big important thing, especially for people like me who, I want to learn more Japanese. Like my Japanese is pretty conversational fluent, and I can do basically everything. I did my taxes by myself last week, and it was super easy. So, but for people who kind of like they're either like making that extra push to N1 level, or people who just want to be able to, have a Japanese girlfriend or Japanese boyfriend or something like that. So what are the ways that you actually teach differently so that you actually help people to reach their goals in language?
gotcha. So the first question about how much Japanese do you actually need? I'll probably even though we run our own even though we offer Japanese lessons, I would say that most people in general only need N3. And like Charlie, in your case, you're a very good marketer, you're very good at writing content, producing content, and your target audience is foreigners. So I think, to be honest, in your case, like N3 is enough because you already have a skill and you have a market to target that skill with. And I think it'd be easy for you to find companies who would like your talent. For I would say also if you have programming skills, obviously you could get by with N3.
Yeah,
Or
I
if
know
you
quite
would
a lot
like
of people
to.
who are working in technology in IT or computer programming or something who they barely speak any Japanese, but it's okay because actually most companies in Japan will hire coders who speak English and they have English coding teams as opposed to Japanese coding teams, which is really interesting.
That is correct. And if you're fine with teaching, for I would say for your whole time in Japan, having N3 is enough. And what I mean by N3 is you can communicate with you want, pretty much in general, you can communicate what you want with other people. So you have enough language skills to develop a relationship with Japanese people. And it's enough to have a, let's say, to make a friendship. If you want to create your own business, I think you could get by with N3 if you run your own English language school. But if you want to be in charge, meaning you want to reduce the odds of being deceived by potential Japanese partners, it hasn't happened to me, but I've heard of it happening to other people. It's you definitely need N2, N1 just so you can understand enough about taxes. Enough about accounting so that you don't get tricked.
Yeah, and that's some pretty advanced Japanese once you get to that point where you're trying to figure out those things. So I still remember when I was trying to learn words about changing houses, the like hikoshi, and a lot of those words, like you realize how many different words there are for free money for no reason, and and so you end up like wondering like how am I getting scammed if I didn't know what these words were, if I didn't know how to do this, how would people just be like adding little fees on top of what I'm doing for no apparent reason, just because they're like, oh yeah, that's just naking, it's just it's just money and you just have to pay it. And it's like if you don't know what that is, then you're like, oh okay, I guess that's just what it is. But it's very easy to get your extra money taken away from you.
And I'll say, if you don't speak Japanese, if you open your own business, you're going to have to spend a lot more money to hire someone who does speak English to do the same thing.
Right. That's a good point. Yeah.
And you have a much narrow talent market for finding good talent people who can help you expand your company.
Great. Hi everyone, I hope you're enjoying the conversation, and I just want to take a quick moment to mention that this podcast is only possible because of the support of jobsinjapan.com. So next time you're looking for a job, check out jobsinjapan.com. There are tons of jobs on there, not only in English teaching, but also software engineering, hospitality, marketing and consulting, among many others. Most of the jobs on the board do not require any specific level of Japanese, and you can get started in minutes. So next time you're looking for a job, check out jobsinjapan.com, and let's get back to the conversation. Okay, so how did you adapt your schools to the pandemic then? Because you mentioned earlier that if the pandemic hadn't happened, you'd be growing a lot faster, you'd be nationwide. So how did that affect your business, and how did you must have changed something a little bit to sort of reduce the in-person time and then maybe have online classes or whatever it was?
Yeah, for us, so COVID has had a big impact on us. I think we did close down one school, but all of our competitors closed down a minimum of two, and I would say on average, probably four schools. So everyone has been hit, but I would say we were hit the least. And I would say the main reason, one is, I think our business model is more, let's say if the economy goes down, I think we're more recession proof in the sense that our school is called One Coin English, and you can take a group, or you could take one group lesson a week for about 1,000 yen per lesson, or you could take three lessons per week for about 600 yen. And in our case, no one can really compete with us on price. Everyone who has tried, or our business model has been copied around 8 times. And I'll say no one has been successful at it.
Interesting. How do you manage to charge so little for your classes and you're able to actually keep running and even, be profitable and open more schools?
In our case, luckily, we have a CEO who's a professional marketer.
Yeah,
Also, we have.
The marketing is a part of it, but I mean, you've got locations you need to pay for, you've got teachers you need to pay for. How can you operate a school when you're getting 600 yen for the class? How does that work?
Gotcha. In our case, we actually have a successful study abroad service as well. So we have a very successful study abroad program, which makes very good profits.
So it's almost like it's not like a loss leader necessarily, but you don't need to make too much profit from the actual classes if you can sort of upsell people on a study abroad program.
And other things like that.
Interesting.
But
Okay, that's a
to
really
get,
interesting strategy.
but you need it took us a while, and you need a lot of money to develop those services.
Yeah, I'm sure it takes a while, but now that you've set it up, it's able to run itself. And yeah, that's super interesting
And
strategy. I would never have thought of that because I would just be thinking, how do you possibly make enough money from from a 600 yen class? Like, I think I was doing I don't know if you've ever tried these, but local ward offices often have a language class that they do for either free or very close to free. So the one I took when I was living in Nagoya was, I think it was something like 5,000 yen for a semester, which was weekly classes for like 10 weeks. So it ended up being, a 2 hour and 15 minute class would cost about 400 yen. And I thought, okay, no language school can compete with that. And it was basically all speaking, but the teachers weren't like teachers, they were all volunteers. So they were basically coming along to maybe some of them kind of wanted to practice their English a little bit, which was not really the point. Some of them wanted to make some foreign friends. And I had I'm still in touch with a few people that I was chatting to in those days. But the ward offices do it very, very cheap, but the quality level is, in terms of language, it's super variable. Like, some places are good. When I tried to do the same thing when I moved here to Tokyo, every place I tried was just like, some old people. They didn't really want to teach anything. It was kind of just like, a place to go. And I didn't find that very engaging at all. So yeah, there's a lot of options out there.
Actually, that's our for the Japanese for Japan Switch. That's actually one of our targets is foreigners who have gone to the community center and were greatly dissatisfied with the
Wow, maybe I should
service.
sign up.
Like
Because I think
you.
that's basically around the time that I stopped studying Japanese on a sort of weekly basis, and my study became much more sort of practical, like, because I was able to speak in Japanese for most things every day anyway. And so I would just, make friends with Japanese people, speak Japanese with my girlfriends or, whatever.
I did want to ask you a question. I think you asked about our Japanese, like at Japan Switch, like what do we offer? And so actually at Japan Switch, we're kind of unique in the sense that we actually don't teach reading and writing.
Why
And
not?
for me, I think you can do it on your own. There's a lot of good apps on how to study kanji. Like you could use the Remembering the Kanji book. I think there's a site called Kanji Kohi, which is free. There's a lot of apps where you can study Japanese kanji.
Yeah, I used Anki for a long time, and that was
Yes.
quite useful.
Anki is also free unless you're on iOS. And I used Anki as well to pass N1. So and also like, reading, let's say, I'm pretty sure, or I doubt text in the book will be more interesting than something else outside the book, which you can find on the internet.
Right, and especially if you're in person with someone in a classroom, this is the best opportunity you have to speak with someone and actually
Exactly.
improve your speaking skill.
Exactly. So for us, with book one is kind of interesting because like book one, I think how most textbook work is they try to teach you in terms of ease. Like this is probably the easiest thing to learn. Then you learn something slightly harder, then you learn something slightly harder and harder. But the problem is, even if it's easy, you may not actually need it. Ease does not translate to usage. So with our textbook, it's like even for beginners, the first textbook is What Japanese to use at a convenience store? What language to use at a restaurant? Asking someone for directions. It's just, even if you're a super beginner, what Japanese can you use immediately? So you start using it and you don't give up. Because I think problems with other textbooks, I think you'll learn something that's easy, but then you'll have conversation with people and like you can't say anything. And you kind of let's say, and Japanese is hard, and you end up giving up. So with our system, it's more focused on how can we get you to use Japanese on a daily basis as fast as possible, so you'll be more motivated to continue using Japanese moving forward. And the second concept is, yeah, like you mentioned, we pretty much just focus on speaking. Like we just try to get you to speak as much as possible during lessons. And the reason is there's a lot of great technology out there, how to study kanji, how to or finding interesting things to listen to. There's sites like, Fluent University, where it has curated content. So all this stuff, even like JLPT, let's say there's a lot of stuff out there to how to study with JLPT. So kind of our method is, you join us, you commit every week to coming or online or once or twice a week, you start using language, you develop a good habit, then let's say you check out our student site, and there's I have N1 myself. I got to N2 through pers while working full time in 3 years. And I outline how I learned reading, how I learned listening, how I learned speaking, how to hack the JLPT, like how to, and it's, I have all this information for free to students. And it's, so I'll say that's what probably makes Japan Switch unique compared to other schools.
Yeah, I think it's really important to focus on that speaking skill. And we were talking about this before we started this the podcast, where there's a guy, I think his name is Stephen Krashen, and his idea is I plus one. Yeah, so his idea is I plus one. It's basically that you should, once you've got a foundation in the language, you should look for situations where you can know 90 to 95% of everything that's being said, and then just have 5 or 10% that you don't really understand. And you can learn that through context. That's kind of how babies learn, right? They understand a few things, once they know like mama, papa, and things like that. Then once you start pointing at things and saying what, this, then go, oh, okay, so that word means this, as opposed to, getting a list of words like they do in all these Japanese textbooks, where it's just like, okay, learn these 25 words, and then like, you kind of, you're kind of doing this thing in your head where you're going, okay, what's cup in Japanese? Oh, it's kapu, and then you're kind of, it takes a little bit of time to go between English Japanese speech, as opposed to kind of looking at something and then going, oh, okay, I remember that in the language,
Or when you told me about that before the podcast, I was like, that's a genius method. I think, yeah, for that, it would be pretty hard to find a teacher who could do that. But for the listeners out there, whoever masters this idea, that could be a business opportunity.
I
Because,
think it's a difficult thing to do for a teacher in a classroom in the moment, but I think for a program, if you could get if you could build a sort of audio program that did that, I think that would be a really useful thing for listening. Because I think I got some of that in some sense through like Pimsleur, which was the first thing that really
yes, I've
helped me
heard
with my
of that.
Japanese. Yeah, it was weird because I had I this was a long time ago. This is 2012, 2013. I'd just come to Japan and I had learned a few phrases, like you said, the really functional things, like what to say at a convenience store and how to use the trains. Like I remember on my in my during my training in Kyoto, and I'm taking a train out into the countryside, and I there are no you go, I don't know if you've ever been to Kyoto before and been out into the countryside. The train stations don't tell you where you are. There's like one sign right at the in the middle of the train station. So if you're on the front train or the back train, you don't see where you are every time you get off the every time the train stops. So I'd be like asking, I'd be asking some old lady or something like, ah, oh, Kono densha wa doku doku ikimasu ka? And she'd be like, oh, yes, that's right, it's going there. And then they'd point and go like, here, get off, you know? So like just that survival Japanese was really helpful. And then you can build upon that. Once you know those things, you can go, okay, so, you know, like nani nani wa doko ikimasu ka? Or something like that. You can kind of pick apart those things naturally without having to translate everything. It can just be like, you know, finding out by pointing at things and learning naturally, which, you know, it might take longer at first. It's got a sort of a longer ramp up. But for me, that was huge because that meant that I could get to conversational Japanese a lot faster than my friends. I was really surprised by how quickly I could speak Japanese. I had a Japanese girlfriend for a year who didn't speak a word of English, and I was able to do that in my second year in Japan because, you know, I could speak Japanese really, really well because I focused entirely on just that kind of thing, like just learning by pointing at things, listening and talking, rather than like, oh, I study really hard every day. I know my Anki, you know.
No, I think that's the only way to continue, or and I think if you can do both, let's say your Japanese can definitely, let's say, go really, really quickly. And I think if you can do both, you can avoid going to a Japanese language school full time.
Yeah.
So you kind of
Awesome.
answered, yeah, I don't need, there's you pretty much nailed it, so there's nothing for me to add on that.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much, Tyson, for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate all of your insight. So, where can people find about you or One Coin English or Japan Switch or anything they want to find out about?
Perfect. Yes. So for Japan Switch, you can find us at www.japanswitch.com. It's spelled just as it sounds. If you're looking for a part-time teaching position in Japan, especially Tokyo or online in Japan, we are onecoinenglish.com/hire me. And if you're, I also have media site where I share, since I was an HR manager, I was HR director of my company, English School, before I ran the Japanese branch. And I share a lot of my knowledge on being a recruiter, manager, trainer, and how to develop a career as a foreigner in Japan. And you can find that at bfftokyo.com. So, like, best friends forever, bfftokyo.com. And we have a ridiculous amount of content on job hunting, what companies hire foreigners who don't speak Japanese, and in-depth reports on each job type. And we also provide a lot of recommendations to jobs in Japan because we love you guys.
Thank you so much. Awesome. Thank you, Tyson. It was great.